And welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland with you on a Thursday it is. Now, Vicky's away today. She'll be back tomorrow. But we're not going to be lonely because we have a great pianist here in the studio with us in the form of Adam Neiman. Welcome.
Thank you.
Saw you perform some spectacular Ravel and Chopin last night. And that's a side of your performing I hadn't seen yet. More familiar with your Mozart CD that's just out featuring you and the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra.
Yeah, we're so excited. We just had the release party last night at Farley's House of Pianos, and it was a lot of fun.
These early Mozart piano concertos, Mozart wrote, I guess, by the usual count, would be 27 piano concertos, but the first several are a little bit complicated, based, some of them, at least, on sonatas by J.C. Bach.
Yes, the first four, in fact, were basically transcriptions of J.C. Bach pieces that he orchestrated and featured the keyboard. Let's not forget that he was probably in single digits in terms of age
yes.
at the time. So it's, that's a really great way to get to know the concerto medium. So his first original piano concerto was actually number 5. And then what we did is we recorded numbers 6, 8, and 9 for the CD. And that has a special significance because those three concertos were actually written in Salzburg the year that he left Salzburg. And that was pretty much the end of his Salzburg days. He moved to Vienna, moved away to get into the bigger musical scene. And so there's sort of his farewell to Salzburg. The numbering of the concertos is very strange. Number 7 is actually for multiple keyboards. It's for 3 keyboards. So it doesn't really count in terms of the singular solo piano
right.
concertos. It's not really on the list, although they made it number 7 for some reason. Number 5, we considered recording it, but number 6, 8, and 9 were just such good pieces, and we thought the three of them hold up together very beautifully. There's also precedence. I forget which year it is, but Mozart actually performed all 3 of those concertos in one evening. And so we thought that was kind of neat to
almost sort of to reconstitute a Mozart concert in a way.
Exactly.
Well, this is what the finale of the piano concerto number 6 sounds like, a concerto in B flat. So this would still be a very young Mozart that we're talking, and yet I suspect had he written nothing else, we'd still be hearing these pieces occasionally.
Oh, yes.
Our pianist, once again, is Adam Neiman, and he's performing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, Andrew Sewell conducting the finality to the Mozart Piano Concerto No. 6. Rather gracious finale there at the very end there, after all that sparkle provided by Mozart in the third movement of his 6th piano concerto, a concerto in B-flat. Adam Neiman was the pianist there with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, Andrew Sewell conducting. So how much of that was Mozart and how much of it was Neiman?
Mostly Mozart, a little Neiman, because in this particular concerto, Mozart left out the traditional Eingang improvised elements, which is where Mozart will write a stop into the music, a fermata, where everybody comes to a stop, and then you just see the next part written, and it was understood that the performer would either improvise or write some kind of a link between those two sections, to smooth out the transition. And it was actually just a place for Mozart to show off, basically. I took a little bit of artistic liberty in one of those Eingangs. I went a little crazy, but it was fun to do. Of course, Mozart did write the big cadenza at the end of it. I have a very special feeling for that piece. It's just, it's an underrated concerto, and so charming, beautiful, an incredibly beautiful slow movement, and actually quite difficult to play, not only for the pianist, but for the orchestra, specifically the horn.
So some of those high notes in there.
Yeah, high B flats and Cs and As, and I just... I really wonder as to who could have played it during his time, because they're playing on natural horns, which certainly made it more difficult to play those high notes. And even for modern horn players, it's a challenge. I'm just so impressed with the job the principal horn player did on this recording, because it's just incredibly clean and nice.
Well, knowing Mozart, it would be tempting to think he was up to either of two things with that horn part. One would have been that he wanted to just really try the patience and the lip of a horn player that he specifically knew, and the other was just, well, let's see how tough we can make this.
Well, I think he was appealing to the aristocracy with this piece, but at the same time flexing his muscles a little bit. What's interesting about doing 6, 8, and 9 all together on one CD is you definitely see a personality change. Because in 6, which is written at the beginning of this particular year when he was composing this stuff, it definitely shows the pianist. It's quite a virtuosic piano concerto. It's virtuosic for the orchestra, but also at the same time, the music is quite tame. It's all in major, and it's very gracious and charming and elegant. So certainly the aristocracy would have liked it, I'm sure. Although there were things in it that, indicate Mozart's sarcasm and humor, which they probably didn't even get at the time. Then you get to the 8th concerto, and it's also very gracious and kind, but a little bit stronger, a little bit firmer, more powerful, more of a real statement. And then he has this last movement with this sort of minuet thing, turned set of variations where the piano kind of goes crazy. And again, he's appealing. And then in the 9th concerto, you get something really, really, really different. You get this enormously huge concerto with unbelievably fast passage work, deep, profound writing, a tragic requiem-like slow movement. And the difference between 6, 8, and then 9 is just so vast that he certainly was not writing that for people. He was writing that for himself. And it's considered, number 9 is really considered his first true masterpiece concerto.
With full emotional range.
It stands up to anything Beethoven wrote or Brahms or anyone else who came after. And frankly, who was writing 30 to 32-minute piano concertos at that time? Nobody.
Yeah, that's quite a monument in itself. Now, what about those cadenzas where, again, the pianist, the soloist in any concerto gets to go pretty wild? Sometimes they're written down, sometimes they're not. What about Mozart?
Well, yeah, he wrote down cadenzas for some concertos and left out cadenzas in others. I don't think there was any particular rhyme or reason to it. It's not like he left out cadenzas on purpose. I think he just never got around to writing them down. Because frankly, Mozart was such an incredible improviser that, he could just show up in a concert, having never played his own piece before, play it with orchestra, conduct it, and just improvise incredible cadenzas on the spot. I mean, it's so mind-boggling that I can't even wrap my head around it. But I was lucky enough that with the 8th and the 9th concertos, he did provide cadenzas. But what was fun, the Baron Reiter edition, which is a really good edition for Mozart, prints several versions of each cadenza. And this is because Leopold, Mozart's father, actually wrote down Mozart's various improvisations based on how he played it. And they range in length and mood and difficulty level. And it's such a nice luxury for the performer to be able to choose a cadenza that appeals to you on a particular moment. So
you're not quite that spontaneous with it, I gather, in performance, though. You can't just, at the last second, like Mozart, say, well, I think I'll play this one today.
Well, I can if I learn them. And I actually did learn all the cadenzas just to have that choice on reserve. But I'm not trained in improvisation per se, so I can improvise for myself at home to a satisfactory level, but I wouldn't trust it on stage to improvise a full cadenza to a Mozart concerto on the spot, no way.
Well, let's hear, for contrast, one of the slow movements of one of these concertos. It'll take us down toward the quiz question. We'll have that at 12:30 or so, as usual. This is the slow movement of the concerto number 9, the one that you, Adam, just mentioned as being really considered the first full-blown Mozart piano concerto with, as I said, the full emotional range. And I suppose most of that emotion is going to come out in the slow singing movement.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's profound and tragic, and Mozart at his best, really.
And here we are again then with Adam Niemann, the pianist, and the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, Andrew Sewell, conducting the slow movement of Mozart's piano concerto number 9 in E-flat. The pianist there, Adam Neiman, with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, Andrew Sewell conducting. That was the middle movement, the slow movement, maybe even the most expressive movement of the Piano Concerto No. 9 in E-flat of Mozart. And we will get to that quiz question in just a minute, and I'll bet you'll know the answer today, too. What does it take to bring out what really needs to be brought out in a slow movement? Say, from a conducting standpoint, Andrew.
Well, interesting. Well, as we just heard, it's such an incredibly romantic and intimate movement that one has to kind of slow one's heart rate down and just drink it in.
Transition. Breathe.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And then he brings the whole human emotion way, way down to this kind of serenity, and then suddenly the brightness and sparkle of the last movement, which is just an incredible last movement. I know that listeners will want to hear that at some point, but it really is. It is really one of the most powerful concertos, and as Adam mentioned earlier, it's his first masterpiece. So it's, it has an interesting title, however, the Jeune Homme.
This mysterious title.
Yes, very. Yeah. That, there's all sorts of conjecture as that this really was a person or wasn't, and
so some
as
kind
far
of
as I can read,
and nobody really knows.
Mm-hmm. But it's got the title anyway. Yeah. It provides intrigue still today.
Yeah. Yes. Well, in some ways, those concertos are mysterious, aren't they? We don't know exactly what Mozart's situation or frame of mind was. Again, as you say, Adam, if you've got three different cadenzas, obviously Mozart was shifting in his his moods and reactions.
Well, to play this, we had to, in a way, stop performing and just let the microphone come to us, because I think in music like that, you can't really overplay it. You can't be playing out for the hall. It's very different than playing it in a concert. And it was so nice to just be able to play as one, like a chamber ensemble, really, in this piece, and that's I think how we approached the emotional content of the music.
Yeah, it's a luxury not to have to play to a hall of 5,000 every time, and to be able to just play it more as it was intended to be played for a fairly small group.
Yeah,
but this is also a great opportunity for the chamber orchestra to record in the Capitol Theater for the first time for a CD. The last two CDs we've done has been in the Mitby Theater.
It records very well, doesn't
it's,
it?
It's a beautiful, beautiful acoustic.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for stopping by this afternoon and going through the vicissitudes of parking and all the uncertainty that goes with them. We've had Andrew Sewell, conductor of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, and pianist Adam Neiman, both of whom are represented well in this CD featuring, it's actually two CDs, isn't it? Featuring Mozart's three early piano concertos, and then also on there is the Prague Symphony with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And can't wait to find out what you do next. Looking forward to that.